Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, November 11th, 2020. We'll start with the front page rather of the commercial news, and the top story today is entitled Committee to Act on OSF Agreement, and this is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. The Danville City Council's Public Works Committee tonight will consider a redevelopment agreement for OSF's new medical prompt care facility at 1 North Logan Avenue at Main Street and Logan Avenue. The link for the 6 p.m. teleconference meeting can be found on the city's website at www.cityofdanville.org. Public comments can be submitted by 4:30 p.m. today to cityclerk@cityofdanville.org. The committee will act on a Western Gateway Tax Increment Financing Redevelopment Incentive Program grant application, Western Gateway Tax Increment Financing Redevelopment Agreement with Joseph Urbana Investments, LLC of Peoria, and a budget amendment in the city's Western Gateway TIF District Fund. The TIF RIP grant program allows for up to $50,000 grants. The projected public improvement to be invested in the Western Gateway District is $117,099. The $50,000 grant, 43% project reimbursement, would be given after completion of the project. Under the redevelopment agreement, the city also would pay the remaining $67,099 for the public improvement project in TIF funds for eligible development costs for the improved facilities. The existing sanitary main runs through the building pad location and must be relocated. Engineering plans have been completed and approved by City Engineer Sam Cole to relocate the line off premises to Logan Avenue. The estimated number of jobs to be created with the medical facility is 15. Construction by D. Joseph Construction of Peoria is expected to start with city approval in November, be completed in April of 2021, and the facility open in May of 2021. Construction is estimated to cost at least $1 million. The city budget amendment of $45,000 for the TIF grant comes from the downtown TIF cash reserve account. Zoning officials in September approved major variances for setbacks at 1 North Logan Avenue for OSF Healthcare looking to expand its services with another urgent care medical facility. The vacant 47-acre property is adjacent to the gas station at Gilbert and Main Streets. Proposed construction is a 3,200 square feet medical building and parking. Major variances are for a reduction of the front yard on the west side from 12 feet to 8.74 feet and reduction of yard requirement on the north and east sides from 10 feet to 5 feet. A zoning commission concern was about unknown traffic patterns with the Carl project. In other business, the committee will consider amending the Historic Preservation Commission design criteria. According to planner Natasha Elliott, the changes are overall more user-friendly. It helps those who own a historic building to comply with Chapter 160 of the Municipal Code. It allows for more cost-effective modifications to the buildings, such as the use of vinyl siding when approved by the Historic Preservation Commission. And finally, it recommends that any new home built within a historic district will fit. I think the goal here is to prevent abstract, futuristic, and contemporary architecture from being built in these areas, according to Elliott. Appropriating $750,000 in motor fuel tax funds for Ferndale Avenue pavement stabilization and resurfacing. The 5-mile section is from Liberty Lane to Poland Road. The project is to rehabilitate the pavement and drainage systems there, according to the resolution. The city's consultant, Knight & Associates, LLC, is finalizing design documents and obtaining construction permits. the city will seek bids for construction. The resolution states it is appropriate to use motor fuel tax funds or Rebuild Illinois funds to pay for this work. And finally, a 2-year agreement with AT&T for 36 to 40 POTS, or land, telephone, internet system lines for pump stations, building, and fire alarm systems and traffic lights. The cost is $33 each per month. Our next story is titled Red Kettle, Salvation Army to Kick Off Campaign. And this story is also by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. The Salvation Army in Danville will kick off its Red Kettle campaign fundraiser this week. The kickoff will be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Thursday at Mad Goat Coffee at 701 South Gilbert Street in Danville. During the event, the Salvation Army will have its Red Kettle out, asking customers for donations, and freebies will be given to people who donate to the campaign during the event. Our goal on November 12th is to hype up the campaign, increase awareness of the opportunity to get involved, and emphasize that the need is even greater this year to rescue Christmas to the most vulnerable in our communities, according to a Salvation Army press release. The public's support is needed, as the Salvation Army expects to serve up to 155% more people with Christmas assistance as resources are available. This includes helping place presents under the tree, putting food on the table, paying bills, and providing shelter for those without a home, according to Paula Santiago, Special Events and Development Coordinator for the Salvation Army, serving Champaign and Vermilion counties. Santiago said the overall Red Kettle fundraising goal this year is $40,000, which is less than in past years. The Salvation Army in Danville is starting its annual holiday fundraising campaign in order to rescue Christmas to help meet the unprecedented need this holiday season. During this 130th anniversary of the Red Kettle campaign, the Salvation Army could see up to a 50% decrease in funds raised through its iconic Red Kettles due to economic impacts from COVID-19, such as closed retail stores, less retail foot traffic, people carrying less cash and coins, etc. Throughout the Christmas season, the Salvation Army expects to see an increase in need across the nation due to hardships from COVID-19, which means the Christmas season truly is in need of rescuing for those most vulnerable. We want to help lift their burdens and spread the joy that the holidays instill. We hope the community will join us to rescue Christmas for those in need, according to the Salvation Army press release. Every donation, such as through a sustaining monthly gift, provides help and hope to those in need. This will allow the Salvation Army to ensure the holidays are bright while continuing to provide services as needs continue to increase through the new year. There is also a virtual Red Kettle to donate to at the website sadanvill.org. Those who want to volunteer to help the Salvation Army with its campaign by ringing bells can sign up at www.registertoring.com. In addition, the Salvation Army's Angel Tree allows people to adopt angels to give presents to children and families in need. An Angel Tree can be found at Walmart. We also have this article on the front page from Peter Hancock at Capital News, Illinois, entitled Pritzker Announces Tier 2 Mitigations in 3 More Regions. Statewide total cases since pandemic began nears 500,000. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Monday that 3 more regions of the state will be placed under even stricter COVID-19 restrictions starting Wednesday as the state's rates of infections and hospitalizations continue to climb. The virus is winning the war right now, Pritzker said during his daily COVID-19 briefing in Chicago. 10 of the state's 11 regions are under Tier 1 mitigations, which include the closing of bars and restaurants to indoor service and limiting the size of public gatherings to 25 or fewer, among other measures. Only Region 1, which includes Northwest Illinois, is under Tier 2 mitigations. Restrictions under Tier 2 include limiting public gatherings to 10 or fewer people and limiting outdoor seating at bars and restaurants to 6 or fewer people at a single table. Starting Wednesday, Pritzker said, Region 5 in southern Illinois, Region 7, which includes the South Chicago suburbs in Will and Kankakee counties, and Region 8, which includes the western suburbs in DuPage and Kane counties, will join Region 1 in those stricter mitigation measures. Regions are placed in the first tier of resurgent mitigations whenever the average test positivity rate exceeds 8% for 3 consecutive days. The restrictions are lifted only after the positivity rate falls below 6.5% for 3 consecutive days. A full list of the mitigation measures in place in each region is available on the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunities website. Pritzker said the latest actions are being taken because of rising test positivity rates in each of the regions. In Region 5, according to the most recent data on the Illinois Department of Public Health's website, the 7-day rolling average positivity rate stood at 11.5% on Saturday, November 6th, while Region 7 posted a 16.4% rate and Region 8 stood at 13.7%. Each of those regions has been under Tier 1 mitigations for more than 2 weeks. Region 5 was placed under those restrictions October 22nd, while Regions 7 and 8 followed on October 23rd. But those measures so far have failed to bring down the rate of infections in those areas, and Pritzker put the responsibility for that on local officials. Some elected leaders are allowing this continued rise in positivity to balloon out of control while taking no action, he said. These mayors and city councils and city boards and state's attorneys need to take some responsibility for keeping their constituents safe. I promise them that responsibility pales in comparison to what could come when the hospitals in your area are filling up and there aren't enough nurses or doctors to save their constituents' lives. In addition to the 3 regions where Tier 2 mitigations were announced Monday, 2 other regions appear to be headed in the same direction, according to IDPH data. Those include Region 2, which includes Peoria, the Quad Cities, and several surrounding counties, and Region 3, which includes Springfield, Quincy, and other areas of West Central Illinois. The rolling average positivity rate in both of those regions stood higher than in Region 5, 13.2% in Region 2 and 14.4% in Region 3. But the Tier 1 mitigations in those regions have been in effect only since the first week of November. A spokeswoman for Pritzker said in an email that the administration typically waits for 2 to 3 weeks before moving a region into a higher tier of mitigation. All of Illinois has been on an upward trajectory of COVID-19 infections since early August. During his briefing, Pritzker noted the average number of new cases reported daily in Illinois has jumped 380% since October 1st, while the positivity rate has climbed 180%, and both hospitalizations and deaths per day are up 150%. From Saturday through Monday, Illinois Department of Public Health reported a total of 33,020 new confirmed and probable cases, an average of just over 11,000 per day, and 132 virus-related deaths. The preliminary 7-day rolling average positivity rate stood at 11.4%. That pushed the statewide total since the pandemic began to 498,560 cases and 10,210 deaths. Given the current rate of spread, Illinois will likely surpass 500,000 total cases on Tuesday. As of late Sunday night, 4,409 people in Illinois were reported hospitalized with COVID-19. Of those, 857 patients were in intensive care units, and 376 of those patients were on ventilators. For the week of November 2nd through the 8th, the average number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 each day stood at 4,043, the highest it has been since the peak of the first wave of the pandemic in mid-May. The average number of people in ICU beds stood at 799 per day, the highest number since early June, while average ventilator use stood at 349 per day, the highest rate since mid-June. And on the same topic, quickly, there's a note on the front page with no byline entitled 15th County Death. The Vermilion County Health Department reported 12 new cases Monday, one resident in their 90s, two in their 70s, two in their 50s, two in their 40s, two in their 30s, one in their 20s, and two teens, and one released, which bring us to a total of 1,925 positive cases, 241 of which are active. Vermilion County Health Department also reported the county's 15th COVID-related death, a woman and her hundreds. There are currently 21 COVID-positive Vermilion County residents hospitalized. The Health Department has received 41,413 negative test results. And now we'll turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, November 10th. The first is for Uva Christina Haas. Uva Christina Haas was born on September 3rd, 1918, and she passed away as a result of COVID on November 6th, 2020. A public graveside celebration of life service will be held on Saturday, November 14th, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Oak Hill Cemetery. Reverend Ryan Harris will officiate. Burial will be in Oak Hill Cemetery, and Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with arrangements. There will also be a celebration of Uva's life at a later date. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the service wear masks and practice social distancing. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made in Uva's memory to From Your Heart to Their Souls Shoe Drive. Checks should be made to ROE Shoe Drive and sent to ROE Attention Tricia Keith at 200 South College Street, Suite B in Danville, 61832. Gerald E. McMasters. Gerald E. McMasters, 79, of Catlin, passed away at 5:24 p.m. on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, at the Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana, Illinois. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, November 13th, at the National Cemetery in Danville, Illinois, with Darren Perkins officiating. Catlin American Legion will provide military honors. Masks and social distancing will be required at this service. Robison Chapel, Catlin, Illinois, is handling the arrangements. Harry Hoagland. Harry H. Hoagland, 85, passed away peacefully on November 6, 2020. Due to COVID-19, the family will be having safe and socially distanced services requiring masks to be worn. We would love to see everyone, but know that Harry would not want to jeopardize anyone's health during this time. We will be having a memorial and celebration of life at a future date to share hugs and wonderful stories with one another. Until that time, the visitation will be Wednesday, November 11th, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Covington, Indiana, at 420 3rd Street in Covington. The family will also receive visitors on Thursday, November 12th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church, 824 East Main Street in Danville. The funeral service will follow at 11 a.m. with Pastor Kent Tibben officiating. Burial will be in Mount Hope Cemetery in Covington. Gerald R. Stevenson. Gerald R., or Jerry Stevenson, 86, of Georgetown, passed away at 7 a.m. Thursday, November 5th, at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman. He had resided there only briefly. Graveside services will be at 1 p.m. on Friday, November 13th, at Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown, Illinois. Jotam Torres will officiate. Masks and social distancing will be required at the service. Robison Chapel in Catlin is handling the details. Randy W. Boges. Randy W. Boges, 69, of Tilton, passed away at 9:20 a.m. at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville on November 6th, 2020. Per Randy's wishes, there will be a private family service at a later date. Burial will be in Danville National Cemetery with military rites accorded by American Legion Post 210. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with arrangements. The family would like to thank the fourth floor nurses at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center for their excellent care given to Randy during his final days. Marcia Lou Cranmore. Marcia Lou Cranmore, 81, passed away Sunday, November 8, 2020, surrounded by family. A public visitation will be on Thursday, November 12th, from 11 to 1 p.m. at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. IDPH guidelines regarding face masks and social distancing will be enforced. Following visitation, private services will be held and Marsha will be laid to rest at Gundy Cemetery in Bismarck. Lila Eckert. Lila Cousins Eckert, 92, passed away on Friday, October 30th, 2020, at Baptist Health in Louisville. Donations in her memory can be made to Americans United for Separation of Church and State, the Alzheimer's Association, ACLU, or the Kentucky Humane Society, or National Parks Foundation. E.M. Coote's son's funeral home was in charge of arrangements. Private services were held. Wayne Eldon Carter. Wayne Eldon Carter, 79, of Hupston, died at 6:45 p.m. Sunday at Carl Hupston Regional Health Center. A private funeral and burial will be held for the Navy veteran with military rites accorded by the Hupston American Legion Post 384. Burial will be in Floral Hill Cemetery, Hupston, and visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hupston. We kindly ask that face coverings be worn and social distancing is maintained by those who attend the visitation and or service. Jessica Lynn Jess Thorne. Jessica Lynn Jess Thorne, 43, of Hupston, died at 2:04 p.m. Friday at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Burial will be in Floral Hill Cemetery and visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main in Hupston. We kindly ask that face coverings be worn and social distancing is maintained by those who attend the visitation and or service. Michael D. Tipsword. Michael D. Tipsword, 76, of Catlin, passed away at 5:17 p.m. Saturday at home. Visitation is from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, November 12th at Robison Chapel in Catlin. Military honors will be provided by Catlin American Legion, and memorials in his memory can be made to the Catlin Public Library. And that's the end of the obituaries for today. We're going to return to some other items from the commercial news and the local section. And the first is NSDAR visits Vermilion County War Museum. This is by Carol Hicks. Danville. Barbara Standish, chapter of NSDAR of Hubston, took a trip back in time with a tour of the Vermilion County War Museum in Danville last week. The museum has clothing, weaponry, and other artifacts beginning with the Revolutionary War through Vietnam and to the present that have been bought, loaned to, or donated to the museum by previous veterans or by the families from the veterans' estates. Some items are original to the wars, even as far back as the Revolutionary War. Some are copies of originals, all unique and interesting to see. 60,000 items are in the museum, according to Larry Weatherford, including one rare item that no one else anywhere in the world has, an item of Hitler's, which is in the Nazi area. The museum also has a rare individual volunteer, a 19-year-old Irish lassie by the name of Nicole Bolton Smith, whose knowledge of European history added a more rounded view to the tour instead of one-sided point of view from our own historical knowledge. She is also well-versed in the history of her native Ireland. This trip to the War Museum was the result of the Illinois State District Director Julie Waller's visit at the joint chapter meeting between Barbara Standish and Princess Waikiki Cap chapters last month in Cisna Park. Waller's presentation of our special veterans, who they are and why they are special, highlighted DAR member veterans that have served or are serving from the District 3 area. One woman, Jill Knappenberger from Alliance Chapter, who turned 102 last September, served in World War II at the Battle of the Bulge, one of only four women known to be in that area of the battle during that time of war. The chapters of the Daughters of the American Revolutionary War in Illinois and nationally continue to support veterans and keep alive their history by honoring them, giving back to them in special ways, both living and deceased, and keeping their sacrifices in the forefront of American history. Next, we have a staff report. Warren County motorcycle crash claims a life. Warren County. Just after 2 p.m. Saturday, the Indiana State Police responded to a two-vehicle fatal crash that occurred on U.S. 136 just west of the Wabash River Bridge. Preliminary investigation by Trooper Chandler Stanton revealed that a 2019 Harley-Davidson motorcycle, operated by James McVeigh, 28, of Bolingbrook, was traveling westbound on U.S. 136 when it crossed the center line for an unknown reason. At the same time, a 2015 Chevrolet Colorado, driven by a 28-year-old male from Johnson County, Indiana, who was traveling eastbound when the Harley-Davidson came into his lane. The driver of the Chevrolet attempted to avoid the Harley-Davidson but was unable to do so, and as a result, the motorcycle hit the driver's side of the pickup truck. The Chevrolet traveled off the south side of the road, struck a guardrail, and came to final rest. The Harley-Davidson came to rest in the middle of the east and westbound lanes. As a result of the crash, McVeigh suffered fatal injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene by the Warren City coroner. Notification to the next of kin has been made. The driver of the Chevrolet was transported by StatFlight to St. Vincent Hospital in Indianapolis to be treated for serious but non-life-threatening injuries. There were two passengers in the Chevrolet, one of which was transported by ambulance to OSF Hospital in Danville for non-life-threatening injuries. The other passenger was treated at the scene for minor injuries. U.S. 136 was closed for just over 3 hours due to the investigation and extensive cleanup. And finally, from Community Briefs, Liberty Village of Danville will be hosting a drive-through parade on Veterans Day. This parade is to honor our veterans who live at Liberty Village of Danville, as well as all veterans in the community. A lineup will be held at Turtle Run beginning at 2:30 p.m. And that takes us to the end of our time for today, Tuesday, November 10th. As always, it's been a pleasure to read for you. My name is Greg, and I hope you all have a safe and wonderful day. Take care.